just look at these seven societies. It's seven principal societies, and if you come across the globe from east to west, they are: furthest east, the Japanese Korean society, the Chinese society, two, the Hindu society in India, three, the Islamic society in the Middle East, four, the Greek Orthodox society in Europe, five, the Russian Orthodox society, six, and the Western Christian, seven. And the framework within which those seven societies operate are: one, Buddhism; two, Hinduism; three, Christianity; and four, Islam. I think we've got time just to run over them. Don't you think it's extraordinary that Japan should be called the land of the rising sun? Don't you think it's extraordinary that it should be ruled by an emperor who is supposed to derive from the sun goddess? Do you think it's extraordinary that the great quality there should be ancestor worship? It's a symbol of origin. China. The great thing about China is its ethnic purity. Scarcely ever invaded, or its pure ethnic strain throughout spirit. The Hindu in India, it's a very sensual religion. And it's to do with the body. And the body of Brahma, the parts of the body of Brahma, determine the caste system. It's the opposite of soul. Islam, right in the center, this simple religion of one absolute God, opposite of principle. Orthodox. Byzantine Orthodox Christianity, great thing is that it's never submerged, it comes up again. Its individuality and is kept alive. And it uses the word life so much in what it talks about. It's a living thing, not a dead Jesus on the cross, but a resurrected Jesus in Eastern Orthodoxy. And of course, with Russian Orthodoxy, no question about the accent being on the collective there, opposite of truth. And of course, the West is the mother society, and because it embraces everything within itself, it's signified by the term love. I don't know how you get on with that, but to me it's absolutely extraordinary. And when I see Buddhism as the opposite of the word, and I see Hinduism as the opposite of the Christ, and I see Christianity in all its breakup into sects and whatnot, the opposite of Christianity itself, and I see Islam as the opposite of science. If I turn now to the real, the divine seven and the divine four, I have that whole world situation translated out of fragmentation into a diversity and unity, which is reality. I don't know how you get on with that, but there it is. Now we come to the sixth period in its seven tones, this great scientific age, which is so exciting. Here is Western man just asleep in the Dark Ages, in the womb of the Dark Ages, And as soon as the tone changes to the sixth period, truth is mind, he begins to wake up. Light begins to break. What does he begin to do? Think for himself. And it's the beginnings of Western scientific man. What he's going to do, you see, as never before, is to develop this scientific technology. Somehow or other, he knows that man is destined to have dominion over all the earth. And he's developing his scientific technologies with a view to giving him dominion over all the earth. He doesn't know, as he does this, that it's going to bring him to the point of total self-destruction instead of dominion. You see, what he does is to bring himself to the point of self-destruction, because he learns the way to split the nucleus of the atom. That's why he learns in his physical science to split the nucleus of the atom, and that's going to bring him near to destruction. Whereas what is going to save him is not his physical science, but the opposite of his physical science, his divine science, which is where the nucleus of the atom can't be split. The nucleus of the atom is the unity of God and man and woman. And that can't be split. And that's what saves him. Can you see that happening? But it's what Toynbee calls the great society, the Western society. As it develops its physical science, it's like a great net going out on a world scale and gathering the whole world into it. The whole world capitulates to Westernization. But on account of the West's physical science. And so it becomes a mother society. Toynbee calls it the great society. And he has this lovely sentence: from its beginnings as a grain of mustard seed, the Western society becomes the great society, a tree in whose branches all the nations of the earth come and lodge. That's the Western society. And of course that's going to be true when he reaches his divine science instead of as the opposite of his physical science. I don't know whether you can see it. Can you see Western man as a symbol of generic man? See, generic man is the woman in the apocalypse. And if you can see the character of Western man as a symbol of generic man, the mother society, therefore, we are going to not be parochial, not be personal in our estimate of him, but we're going to see him translate his world into the holy city itself, the city of generic man itself. Now, truth is mind. When the period opens, he begins to wake up. The light begins to break, he begins to think for himself. Out of the superstitions of Rome, the Norman conquest takes place in Britain, and Britain in consequence plays an enormous role in the development of Western man. You see that immediately, because very, very soon in Britain you're going to get Magna Carta, and Magna Carta is the beginnings of democratic self-government for man. Well, that's the great keynote of Western man and of generic man. Magna Carta and the Mother of Parliaments and so on. I don't know whether you can see it, therefore, that right at the beginning of this period, the seed is sown in Western man's thought of that which is eventually, in the end, going to utterly transform the world. And here is a wonderful thing. It's the institution of what are called the Crusades. You see, those awful infidels have dared to capture the Holy Land, and this is anathema to Christians. And so they must go and recapture the Holy Land from the infidels. And irrespective of rank or position, you see, feudalism is at its height. And so the nobles and the barons and the serfs and the vassals and so on, they all club together and they all rub shoulders together in this common cause of rescuing the Holy Land from the infidel. And the result is something unprecedented. The result is the uprising of a middle class in society. The very high and the very low begin to merge. And the result is a middle class in society. And that, of course, that moderate, intermediate, middle way is eventually going to be the great characteristic of generic man himself. So you can come from that opening tone of truth as mind. Can you see Western man there as a little infant? He's in his infancy. Yes, he's in his infancy. Because when you come to truth as spirit, he begins to grow up and he begins to... He's absolutely full of youthful exuberance, Western man, when you enter this second tone, which is called the Renaissance, because a rebirth of learning spreads over Europe. And Western man, what does he do? He sets out to conquer the globe. He knows that his right is dominion over all the earth. And so he sets out on his voyages of discovery to conquer the globe. And one of the great things that what he uses is humanism, which dates back to Greek philosophy of the classical age, which Islam succored during the Dark Ages. And the philosophy of humanism finds its way now to the West. It's not unlike a middle class. It's very second degree-ish, humanism, middle class. It's what he's bringing about. Humanism, you see, says to man, look, you must understand truth for yourself, here and now. Don't wait for a future world salvation such as is preached by the Roman Church. Have salvation now. Understand for yourself now. Don't rely on the priest to tell you. and the result is that the papacy enters a period of decline from which it never recovers. And the age of the great geographical discoveries begins as Western man seeks his earthly dominion. Western society is fast becoming a mother society. Columbus discovers America, and other people have set foot on America before him, but he uniquely founds institutions there on the mainland, I suppose, on the mainland or on the islands. But anyway, and that's why he can be accorded the title of discoverer of America, just as Mrs. Eddy, you see, discovered Christian Science, but she didn't leave it at that because she founded it. And Columbus does the same regarding America. And the West penetrates Central America and Southern America and the existing societies there, which are the story of the Aztecs and the Yucatecs and the Andeans and all the rest, and they all capitulate to Spain, the Spanish conquistadors. Goodness me, where am I? Yes. And the West is really on the rampage. It gains a foothold in India, and only Far Eastern China and Japan remain aloof and out of reach. Islam, we didn't mention it back in the fifth period, but it would have been important to have noted how Islam formed in the eastern area, the Ottoman Empire. You know about the Ottoman Empire in the homelands of Greek Orthodoxy. No, I'm sorry, I'm not reading this very well. Islam is now setting up the Ottoman Empire in the homelands of Greek Orthodoxy, with the result that Orthodoxy is shipped to Russia for safekeeping, where it takes the form of Russian Orthodoxy. And what is in charge in Russia is absolute Tsardom. The absoluteness of the emperor. And Russian Orthodoxy is his religion. And Moscow, you see, she says, I'm the third Rome. Two Romes have fallen. That's Rome itself and Constantinople. The third Rome stands fast. The Church of Moscow shines brighter than the sun in the whole universe. Well, let's go back to England for a moment, because in England, Wycliffe, who's the morning star of the Reformation, he repudiates the papal dogma of transubstantiation. Copernicus overthrows the old theories of astronomy. He refutes the evidence of the senses. Shows that the earth moves around the sun rather than the sun around the earth. You see how the thing is developing, all going to ultimate in the science of being itself. Because now it is that physics is fast separating itself from religious beliefs, so that the age of what is called rationalism, the age of modern science, has begun. And you enter the period of truth as soul. Now Western man is really man. He's really, really coming into maturity. because now he's got to assert his freedom from ecclesiastical domination. And so you get the Protestant Reformation beginning. Martin Luther denounces papal infallibility and the sale of indulgences. Erasmus teaches this beautiful thought that Christianity must be found within the heart of man, not superimposed from outside. And so you have now Protestantism sending down its deepest roots in Britain, Germany, Northwest Europe, where previously what was called Celtic Christianity flourished until it was suppressed by Rome. You've got the Tudors on the throne in England, and Henry VIII dissolves the monasteries, proclaims himself head of an established English church. And what we have to see is how Britain takes care of the Bible. Britain loves and cherishes and succors the Bible such as no other nation ever does. Well, just note now that Christendom has split into three main sections. There's Roman Catholicism, Orthodoxy, and Protestantism. See them in the order of the word Christ, Christianity. Because later on there's going to be a fourth, which negatively is going to be communism, and positively is going to be Christian science. Yes, oh yes. But you see, what Western man is doing is to worship his physical science more than his Christianity. Because his physical science seems to him so real, much more real than his Christianity. Well, at this point, he starts to develop his electrical science and his applied mathematics. All this furthers his devotion to physical science. Now Britain starts to build up this worldwide empire. You see her as a central mother country with a far-flung family of colonies. That's going to play a terrifically important part in a moment. Puritanism, which is an extreme form of Protestantism, takes root in England, and as a result of the Puritans, James I on the throne orders the drawing up of the authorized version of the Bible. And this is the version, of course, that companions Science and Health, when Science and Health appears. The Bible is going to be stem from Britain in this sense, and Science and Health from America. And the two great democracies of Britain and America are thereby going to become the leading democracies of the Western world. Well, there are European migrants now who take the authorized version of the Bible as their most cherished possession when they set sail for the new world. They're fed up with the old world, with all its restrictions, its priestcraft and political domination, and they reach the shores of the east coast of North America and found New England, which they hope is their promised land. You see, you're still in your third tone, truth is soul. It's like the children of Israel finding their promised land, migrating to find their promised land. So that now the British Empire includes these North American colonies. And in the world as a whole, only Far Eastern China and Japan continue to reject the West's advances. They call the West the White Peril. They alone can stand out. That won't be for very much longer. Well, now you enter the tone of truth as principle with the founding of Britain's American colonies. You see, Western man has got this instinct, this deep-seated instinct for democratic government. And through the institution through this inception of the nation, the American nation, through Britain's colonies, democracy takes a huge leap forward. See, the new world of America is destined, the foundations on which the new world of America rises are absolutely unlike the foundations in the old world of Europe. You can see that because in America, as she becomes a nation, the people under God learn to instruct their government, whereas back in Europe, the government instructs the people. Now, this is going to ensure freedom of the individual. It's going to ensure the acceptance of personal responsibility and initiative. This is America. And above all, and this is possibly the most important characteristic or quality, is that she demands the right to own property. And we won't forget that, will we? It's the right to own property, as signifying the freedom of the individual. So she becomes an agrarian society. Even she's starting to reason, look at this, she's starting to reason that evil is a problem, the solution of which will one day be discovered. And of course it will be, foreshadowing the coming of Christian Science. And all these qualities which are incipient and inherent in the American character, I don't know where I read this, somewhere, release for constructive purposes the energy and initiative of ordinary men and women. Can you feel generic man really gradually coming into the picture? All right. Then turn back to the old world for a moment, which the colonists have left behind, and Islamic power is waning both in India and in the Middle East because of westernization. In Russia, Peter the Great wholeheartedly accept westernization, including Western capitalism. In England, the Bill of Rights ends absolutism and the divine right of kings. Can you feel generic man coming more and more into his own? In England also, Isaac Newton brings to light the mathematical calculus. Love that. He propounds new laws of gravitation. It'll be overthrown when Einstein comes, but never mind. Because Newton tries to reduce the whole universe to a mechanistic interpretation and believes that this will explain all scientific questions. And because, really, of Newton and his discoveries, physical science at last completely divorces itself from religious mysticism. Absolute cleavage. Until Christian Science makes the two one, of course. Now come into the truth as life tone? Are we rushing it? Not too much. What? You're very kind. This is, now we're in the 18th century, and it's the era of these revolutions, the Industrial Revolution, the Agricultural Revolution, the French Revolution, and the American Revolution. And it brings about the philosophical movement called the Enlightenment. Enlightenment is questioning authority and puts the emphasis on the empirical method of reasoning in science. Doesn't it? You know, it's reasoning from the standpoint of experience and observation. That's the only thing that counts, they say. And it's because if you had your science and health open at truth as life, that's where we are now with this Industrial Revolution, because man divinely is not made to till the soil, that's 51731, what does he do? He invents machines to do it for him. Can you follow the parallel? Now this is nice, I think, because it is said that the discovery now is the discovery of power in the unity of nature. There is power in the unity of nature, there is power. And because of that, it's said that science has become a social enterprise. I find that very nice, really. Well, the capitalist system fostered in England, but the French Revolution fosters socialism. Then the doctrine of nationalism amongst the individual nations just captivates all Europe. You get Napoleon and all that. The machine age and the factory system results in trades unions in Britain being authorized by Act of Parliament. But just drawing the general picture, you see, so that the thing as a whole can be seen to be developing. You get cotton growing in England's American colonies, and that encourages the dreadful importation of slave labor from Africa. But you see, is it so awful? It is on the surface so awful, but isn't it the means whereby the African becomes not made white, but you see, he becomes more civilized, perhaps you could say, in the end. Well, the next great happening is the American Revolution, or War of Independence. The colonies can't stand the domination of the mother country, and before the war is won, they draw up this Declaration of Independence. And it's marvelous that, because If you're looking at this great tapestry which we're trying to paint, you'll see that it's foreshadowing the Mother Church and her branch churches in the founding of Christian Science. America asserts her independence from the British mother country, the repressions there, and in just the same way that the Mother Church should release the branch churches. But she has to do it by force of arms. The first secession, from the British Empire by one of her colonial dependencies is by force of arms. After that, all subsequent secessions will be voluntary and given voluntarily by the mother country, whether that's quite right. But anyway, they don't have to fight for it in the way that America originally fights for it. And so the American nation, the republic, when the colonies are victorious, the nation of the Republic of the United States of America is born. And after this, the American nation and the British Empire just multiply their dominions. You see, in the Truth Is Life tone, the manhood and womanhood of God, it said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Well, even in the Far East, Japan and China, now they capitulate at last to westernization. And the result is that the West has made the world one westernized world. It's become a 7-in-1 society, mother society. Well, we just ought to note that the fall of the Ottoman Empire now in the Middle East means that Greek Orthodoxy reasserts itself in its original homelands and in the Balkan Peninsula, so that Orthodoxy's preservation will once more be assured when communism in Russia comes along to try to supplant it. You ought to note that mesmerism starts in Germany through mesmer, called animal magnetism. You don't hear of it before. Then comes the American Civil War between the northern states seeking federal union and the southern states, where slave labor is dominant, opting for secession. And once the war ends with victory for the Union, the stage is all set for the birth in America of the universal science of original Christianity, called Christian Science, and the second messianic advent has been cradled by America, no doubt about that. So the nation is now one and indivisible under God. It's tremendous. And Lincoln at Gettysburg, government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. Slavery is abolished, but it's already been abolished in England. And therefore, under God, the founding fathers draw up the American Constitution, and Washington's the first president of the Union. And the motto of the Constitution, this is lovely, isn't it? E pluribus unum, out of many, one. It's getting ready for Christian Science, but you see, Christian Science is really going to say out of one, many. It doesn't matter, it's really both, because what has to be is a diversity in unity. And that's what you get with the states. The individual states are diversified, but the country as a whole is a union. So it's a diversity in unity and a unity in diversity. The wonderful seal of the United States, called the New Order of the Ages. You know it, of course, on the $1 bill, this capstone of a pyramid with a single eye in it descending from God out of heaven and landing on the pyramid. Yes, it's a single radiant eye, the all-seeing eye. And when we were in Italy and we were in what's it called, the Uffizi Gallery in Florence, some of the old masters couldn't believe it, but there it was on the wall, pictures of the Last Supper and Jesus there. And what was descending? Not a dove, but the capstone of a pyramid with an all-seeing eye. You see, and that's what America has been led to use on her great seal. Well, would you come to back to Europe for a moment, because in Europe, Marx and Engels have drawn up the Communist Manifesto. That's calling upon all the workers of the world to unite in revolution against their capitalist masters. What is it? It's the antithetic shadow which the coming event of the discovery and founding of Christian Science in America casts before it. You know that phrase, I never know who says it. Coming events cast their shadow before them. Atheism, it's going to be atheism versus theism. There is no God versus God is all in all. And so, just like its predecessor society, the Roman Empire, in respect of the first messianic advent at the opening of the 5,000-year period, the Western society has now once more unified the world in preparation for the second, 2,000 years later, near the close of the 6,000-year period. And Helen Wright has written this very unique and valuable book where she shows that America under God has proved itself to be the cradle for the second coming of the Christ. So you can come through quite happily now, can't we, to the 19th century, the 1866, because this is the coming of the Second Advent. The founding mission of Mary Baker Eddy from 1866 to 1910. Karl Marx has published the atheistic principles of communism called Dialectical Materialism in 1867 in the book Das Kapital. Right at the same time, you see. The year after the discovery of Christian Science by Mary Baker Eddy. Although he and Engels have set the communist ball rolling, of course, several years before. Now, the idea of mankind's unlimited, unexpendable capital resources is taught through the system of capitalized synonymous terms for the one absolute God in Christian Science. That's the exact opposite of Das Kapital, published, and it's Science and Health, published by Mary Baker Eddy in the Christian Science textbook Science and Health. So you see communism aspiring to be a utopian brotherhood of man on an impossible material basis. Christian Science is this brotherhood, or on a timeless spiritual basis. And if your Science and Health was opened at the sixth tone of the sixth day, truth as truth, where we are now, you would, of course, see that the text is all about the one grand brotherhood of man called assistance in brotherhood. following it all right? Well, in Mrs. Eddy's mission, the textbook Science and Health goes through certain major revisionary stages, and it's these that determine the order of let there be light, let there be a firmament, let the dry land appear, the order of the days of creation as applied to the founding story of Christian Science. At the same time as she brings her textbook through to its fulfillment, she records her discovery in her textbook. She demonstrates her discovery in the human experience through the institution, and finally the dissolution of a centralized church organization. Under Mrs. Eddy, her mother church is designed to bring up and educate its child, the branch church, to the point of individual self-government under God alone. And therefore, like any true mother and her child, it can begin to dispense with its early need for outside mothering. Yes. You see, something wonderful is happening, unbelievably wonderful, in Christian Science, because it's the savior of the world. And what it is destined to do, you see, is to, in Paul's words regarding Jesus, is to break down the middle wall of partition between the Eastern world of totalitarianism and the Western world of democratic, so-called democratic freedom. For to make in itself of twain one new human race, so making peace. You see, that middle wall of partition is literally going to appear in the next tone, the final tone of the sixth period, as what Churchill called the Iron Curtain. It's just right across the middle of Germany, and it is the symbol of the middle wall of partition between us that Christian Science is destined to break down in order to make the two one. You see, can we see it happening? It's beginning to happen. One has prayed about this for years and years. It is beginning to happen. If you look at communism, what do you see? You see total state ownership and man owning nothing for himself. That's the ideal of it. In capitalism, what do you see? Man himself, not the state, owns his own property. What about Christian Science? In Christian Science, God, the divine principle, not the state, is the owner of everything, and man is the owner by reflection only, and not by right of personal possession. This is Christian Science, and if we could see that, we would see Christian Science breaking down the middle wall of partition between East and West, which most likely has already begun. Mrs. Eddy would say, if we do not control our possessions through the understanding that they're spiritual, they will control us through the belief that they're material. Well, now, as soon as Christian Science gets underway in America, and the whole idea of an eventual mother church with a family of branch churches is in the offing, the British Empire, Britain, begins to release her colonies. The first release was force of arms, it was America itself. The second release is 1 year after the founding of Christian Science in 1867, when Canada is granted independent status. It's now resolving voluntarily. And all these subject dependencies and colonies become translated into a commonwealth of independent, self-governing nations. Marvelous, the symbol. Absolutely marvelous. Never mind the faults that were made in terms of human politics. The idea is what concerns us. The founding of Christian Science, we know this so well, don't we? In world consciousness takes place basically through Mrs. Eddy's two consecutive phases of church organization. You see, the first one, she dissolves herself in 1889, and then the marvel is 3 years later in 1892, she resurrects it. She resurrects that very church so that it becomes, and arranges it so that it becomes of itself self-dissolving at her passing. And this is the exact parallel with Jesus' resurrection of his own body following the entombment. That body, the resurrected body, like the resurrected church, becomes self-dissolving, self-translating at the point of the ascension. And so as Mrs. Eddy's career comes to a close, you get the Mother Church at the point of ascension, not destruction. There was no destruction of the body of Jesus. The translation and the ascension. There's no destruction of the Christian Science Mother Church, but its translation from symbol into idea. Lovely to think that body ascends back to its timeless principle. See what it's done? See what the Mother Church had done at that point? It had finished the work which its principle had given it to do. It's the exact parallel with Jesus. I have finished the work which thou hast given me to do. Yes. And she's waged the divine method of warfare, and the great red dragon is defeated, defeated forever, if only she were obeyed. But she's not obeyed, and therefore the book of Revelation says so marvelously, or the way it puts it, is that the dragon's deadly wound was healed. And when the church disobeyed its founder, the dragon's deadly wound was healed. Until now, it's got to be, the wound has got to be of such a nature that it can never, never again be healed. So what she's done is to lay the foundations and open the gates of the universal holy city, so that on these foundations mankind can bring into expression the brotherhood of world peace. But if she's not obeyed, what? World war. But we haven't quite finished with this truth is truth tone. We are really still in the last decade of her mission, which is the first decade of the 20th century. And extraordinary things happen in physical science, quantum physics, dealing with the infinitesimal particles of the atom, the splitting of the nuclear center of the atom. Carl Jung explaining the cosmic unconscious as never before. The whole dream of mortality is turning full circle on itself and cancelling itself out under the impulse of Christian Science. That original mist that goes up from the earth in Genesis 2:6 is turning full circle as we reach this realization of the nothingness of matter and the allness of God. Zelie says that she discovered Christian Science when she did it. It restored the lost Israel. Remember that? The lost Israel? 10 lost tribes. Restored to whom? Restored where? See, they're right out on the circumference, dispersed amongst the nations of the world. Restored to their center, to Judah. It's the womanhood being given back to its own manhood. It's the rib being returned to Adam. It's man not really being returned to God, because God never lost him, but in belief, man being returned, restored to God. Yes. She talks of the great sanity of unity in girdling the world. And I don't know, I never know quite what to make of it, but it looks as if she gives credence for certain of the claims of the movement called British Israel in that wonderful poem called The United States to Great Britain, you know it, of course, where she speaks of Judah's sceptered race. What she's done there is to take that from Jacob's blessing on Judah at the end of Genesis, where he says, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come. And in that poem, she speaks of America, Britain and America together, as constituting, extraordinary really, isn't it, Anglo-Israel. Almost to give credence to British Israel. You do what you like with it on a personal, physical basis or ethnic basis, but it's true spiritually, and that's the thing that matters. So Britain, in her mothering of America, has, in her original mothering of America, has on her royal coat of arms what? The lion of the tribe of Judah and the unicorn of the tribe of Joseph. And there they are. So you see, just as Britain cherishes the Bible and will eventually give the Bible to the world, has done, I suppose, so America gives it science and health and the two together become the manhood and womanhood of God. So what more natural than that as we move now into the final tone of the sixth period, truth is love, that the shift should be from America to Britain. Because whereas America has given the world Christian Science, Britain now, in the final tone of truth is love, is that which gives it the absolute science and system of Christian Science. So that Britain is the sacrificial lamb. The mother country is the sacrificial lamb. When she let her empire, her children go, that's the mother. So that the mother and the lamb are one, and America herself is the bride. It has to be thought about, obviously. Yes. I think we're going to read the poem. We won't quite finish on this tape, but I think it... Would you mind if we read the poem? The United States to Great Britain. We're going to close the sixth tome now on this note. Yes. United States to Great Britain, hail brother. Fling thy banner to the billows and the breeze. We proffer thee warm welcome with our hand, but not our knees. Lord of the main and manor, thy palm in ancient day didst rock the country's cradle that wakes thy laureate's lay. The hoar fight is forgotten. Our eagle like the dove. The American eagle, the symbol of science, you see, returns to bless a bridal betokened from above. List, brother, angels whisper to Judah's sceptered race, thou of the self-same spirit, thou of the self-same spirit, allied by nation's grace, wouldst cheer the hosts of heaven for Anglo-Israel. Lo is marching under orders. His hand averts the blow. I remember John Dorley taking that when it looked as if Britain was going to be invaded, and he said, his hand, and it went across east instead of over the channel. Brave Britain, blessed America. That's the man. You see, the man is always brave, and the woman is always blessed. The lamb and the bride. Unite your battle plan, victorious all who live it, the love for God and man. Now we have to just stop the tape there, and we shall finish it on, to take a little time on a third tape, but it won't take very long. So now we'll turn this tape off and start again on another one.